Good evening and welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program. I'm your host, David Katzmeyer, coming to you as I do every Thursday night at 8 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific. It's currently September 13th, 2012. We have a special guest tonight with us, Mitchell J. Rabin of A Better World TV. Mitchell Rabin is New York. Okay. Well, he's Mitchell Rabin, but he is in the heart of New York, and everybody in New York knows him. Walk down the street. You know Mitchell? Yes, of course we know Mitchell. Mitchell Rabin, let me tell you a little about him. He's an international speaker and teacher, holistic psychotherapist, licensed acupuncturist, coach, meditator, entrepreneur, business consultant, environmentalist, and writer, and more. He's also been hosting and producing the New York-based cable TV show since 1993 called A Better World. That is on the Manhattan Neighborhood Network. It's also simulcast. He's been on TV and radio numerous times and with a weekly radio show on the Progressive Radio Network that he began in 2006 and ran for a number of years. And currently he's doing blog talk radio program as well. You might want to check him out on Wednesday nights. You can find out the information that you want about this program that he has and more at abetterworld.tv. And Mitchell holds a BA from Bard College in Ancient Literature and Theater, and a Master of Arts from the Antioch Graduate School in Counseling Psychology. He is a diplomat of traditional Chinese acupuncture from the Tri-State Institute of Traditional Chinese Acupuncture, certified by the Eastern NLP Institute in Erickson Hypnotherapy, and has been in private practice in New York City, specializing in couples counseling, as well as his integrative mind-body approach to transpersonal psychotherapy and biofeedback using the life system, an interesting thing. You can find out about that from him. I had the good fortune of meeting Mitchell Rabin when I went to a Terrence McKenna lecture back in 1993. He was also attending during the break. I spoke with Terrence. Terrence invited me to lunch. We sat together at a lunch table. A bunch of people came over, and Mitchell was there as well. We met at the lunch, and we've been doing things ever since. In fact, my own work, Colorhythms, the Cycles of Change, the Cycles of Time, was basically publicly debuted after many years of research through A Better World. He had me on A Better World Radio. He had me on A Better World TV. He has been an advocate of my work. And I find that what he has created is an excellent medium for getting the word out. Mitchell also booked me on live lectures. I spoke at the Meta Center in Manhattan. He had me on WBAI Radio, and there were other events and so forth. This is one of the things that Mitchell does. So, folks, if any of you are going to do a live event or have a media release, or you need to get something out on the web and the social networks and so forth, Mitchell Rabin is your man, especially if you're doing it there in New York. So check him out at abetterworld.net. So I see that our good friend Mitchell Rabin of abetterworld.tv has called in and is on the line. Mitchell, are you there?
I am here in full faith and ready for you, Dave.
Well, I'm privileged to have you on the show because you are one of the most worldly people I know. I know that in filming episodes of A Better World TV, your travels have taken you with numerous trips to China, numerous trips to India, and you've had, I mean, just name people on your shows. You travel all around the United States as well. You've been to every region. And what I wanted to talk about tonight a little bit is the cycles of change that you have seen pretty much happening in the national consciousness and in the world consciousness over these past 20 years that you've been in the media, based not only here, but out from your travels around the world. So, Mitchell, what brought you into doing this show? I mean, it pretty much began as an advocation for you. It's just something that you felt that you needed to do. So what really brought you into the media with A Better World?
Well, I was at the time around 1990, Dave, directing a healing center that I founded in New York City called the Center for Creative Well-Being. And I had a flotation tank, and I had what's called a sound boom. It was known as the Rest Rider, which originated, by the way, in your home state of Pennsylvania. And I did my counseling, my stress management coaching, and acupuncture all at the center, and I had others come as well to do various other healing alternative modalities. And at that time, I had the good fortune of meeting the health activist and radio celebrity Gary Null, who I had been a fan of myself for many years. And he came over to my center, and he said, "This is fabulous. I want to have you on my radio show, I want to have you on my TV show, and I want to have you lecture at my next detoxification retreat," which was happening in, 10 days or 2 weeks. So I went, "Oh my God, this is awesome." He began sending me clients. He filled my place up, actually, with his running and walking club, with other referrals. And I then started to lecture for him at that time. And through him, I actually got a taste of radio and TV on a fairly nice scale back in 1990. And I was also being interviewed by others for their television and radio shows pretty locally, I should say, in the tri-state area. And I went, "My word, this is an incredibly effective way to reach more people with a healing touch, a healing word, and an inspiring word than working one-on-one or even couples counseling, which are very different kinds of contexts." So I never stopped working with people privately, either individuals or couples, but I expanded, you could say, Dave, to using media for, honestly, I started to do it for purposes of healing, education, which healing is largely about education, and upliftment, inspiration, motivating people to become the greater part of themselves, to feel empowered and fulfill this wonderful notion that we have going back for many, many decades, if not centuries, of human potential. And that was really the thing that launched me into it. I really have Gary Null to thank, quite honestly, for giving me the taste of television and media in general, and by having me as a guest on his shows. And I've been doing it really since 1993, and when he began Progressive Radio Network, he had been on WBAI-FM, part of Pacifica Radio, for 27 years before a political little event occurred, which had him be dismissed, but then a few years later he was back on. But in the interim, he started something called Progressive Radio Network, an internet-based radio station, just like Blog Talk Radio is, but, you know, a very nice volume of audience members that he had there. And my show both followed him initially, and he, of course, had the biggest audience there, and then was prior to his show. So we set each other up, in a way, over the course of almost 7 years. And recently, I made the switch over to Blog Talk Radio, which, for a number of reasons, is serving me even better. And so, with all the respect to PRN, I have moved on into this other venue and continue to expand here. So it's been, in a way, following what I feel is a trend in my life of reaching increasingly greater number of people with different messages having to do with the fundamental theme, Dave, of creating a better world. And everything that you do with Cycles, which I love the work, as you well know, and I've been thinking about Cycles. I don't think a human being cannot think of Cycles because it's part of our, literally, our day and night life. There's no way to escape them. And your articulation of the particulars of intellectual, emotional, physical, and spiritual Cycles, I think, brings so much to the table. And I have relied on your thinking in this regard oftentimes over the course of the years that we've known each other. And as you know, I've been a real advocate of your work. So I see that as part and parcel, in a cyclical kind of way, of the work that I've been doing as well. And my work is expanding and very much about helping people find meaning, finding purpose, getting in touch with the theme of the current book I'm working on called Sacred Stewardship, Awakening the Soul to Action, which is basically, in a phrase, I'll put it colloquially, get on with it, man. Get in touch with your life. Get in touch with your life force and move on with contributing to the creation of a better world. Give back what it is you've received, and it will, by the way, multiply many times more by so doing. So that's the game I play. I, as a psychotherapist for so many years, tend towards subjects that look at and reflect on the psychological dimension of our lives. I look at the body politic. I look at economics very much through the lens of psychology, and in a constructive way, both analytic, yes, assessment, but primarily remedial, solution-oriented. How can we understand why people are making irrational choices day by day? People on the street, people in power in government, people in power in business. How can we bring ourselves around to a new level of prioritization of values so we can create a harmonious, cooperative, renewable, sustainable, integrity-based, fun, and with many things to laugh about and for, world.
Indeed.
In a phrase, in a paragraph or two. That's what I'm up to.
Well, it looks like you're up to something, and you're doing your part to make a better world. For years, while I was working on the theory, you were involved with the practice. You were getting out in many media, the spoken word, the written word. You're seeing things from both sides of the microphone and of the camera. You yeah. have an archive of just many, many shows from A Better World over the years which are available on your site and so forth. And so it's very helpful to get your perspective. And while you've been going through your travels and looking within a person introspectively through psychoanalytic techniques that you've learned and practiced, you're also looking at things from a sociological standpoint. Your yeah. writings have attracted attention. Arianna Huffington herself, when she met you, has asked you to be a contributing author to her blog, which you are, and so forth.
Yeah.
So New York knows Mitchell Raven, and I'm fortunate that many of our listeners now are going to get to know you as well. So,
I was your guest on your maiden voyage on this radio show.
A wonderful way to launch Blog Talk Radio.
Maybe.
A lot of what you see
Maybe
here.
Some remember me. Maybe some remember me.
Well, our listening group has grown tremendously since that first program approximately 12 weeks ago. And
yes.
In fact, our listenership has grown exponentially. So you're reaching a lot of new listeners tonight.
Beautiful.
For my listeners to know, the system by which we do the programs, we get the newsletter out, we post it up on the site in blog fashion and everything, all of this is modeled after what you pioneered on A Better World at abetterworld.tv. It was a wonderful system, and when I told you, Mitchell, that I was emulating it, you were cheering me on. Go, Dave. That's great. Let me know how I can help you. And I think nothing is better for the listeners than to have you on. Your perspective is valuable to me because of your rich experience and because you've known so many people. We're moving in a nation of rhythms, while at the same time, we're moving in a world of rhythms. And the world is a little bit different now than when you started in out in radio nearly 20 years ago. And
yeah.
certainly, the world has changed since you began in the 20th century. We can say that now. Do you hear a bit of an echo when I say 20th century now? It seems like I'm still getting used
yeah.
to it being the third millennium. And here we
yes.
are talking about the 20th century. So
yeah.
anyway, well, the world has changed.
Well, here we are in the 21st, after all.
Yeah. And so when we talk about things that began in the last century, it's getting to be a while back because it's pre-9/11.
Yeah.
It's really transition away from the machine age. It's pre-recognized rise of China and of India. And we're moving away from industrial factory-based economies to more service-oriented, internationally-based economies. We are becoming a little less isolationist, and we're becoming a little bit more towards reason and ideology rather than territory and all of that. And this is not political statement. As a host, I don't have political advocacy or opinion. I do political analysis, but it's social observation that we are living in a different world today than we were 20 years ago. Mitchell, you've seen a lot of that on your show.
I will comment on that because I feel that it appears that we're living in a different world. And there are aspects that are seemingly different. But I will tell you, true to form to cycles, as I perceive them, we're actually recycling our same old dark side in a new form. But I don't actually see many changes, except for in the appearance of things. And I want to really make the distinction between the appearance of things and the authentic nature of things. And I think there's a huge gulf between them. So looking nationally first, I would say that our country is more than ever affected by corporate power and by a obsequious government, and that the representation of the people is at an all-time low. I don't know if it's ever been very high in this country, despite rhetoric, but now it's at an all-time low, which speaks horribly for the true nature of democratic principles and the principles embedded in our Constitution, and I consider this nothing short, honestly, of criminal. And I see that even though we had the robber barons of old and various oil and other tycoons who called the shots in government back in the late 18th century, the 19th century throughout, the early 20th century, the Rockefellers, the Morgans, the Warburgs, forming the Federal Reserve Act, in fact, of 1913, I actually see what I would call, Dave, a recapitulation, a recycling, if you will, no pun intended, of age-old archetypes and ideas that corporations, big ones, control government, and I actually don't see much of a difference on the inside today. It looks different, it smells different, it sounds a little different, the shapes and colors are a little different, the rhetoric is slightly different. Yes, those are the changes, and yes, there are changes on an international label of level of global power. I completely agree with you with, the so-called Asian tiger arising of China and India and Malaysia and Indonesia, and obviously Japan was there before them all, Korea, Vietnam. It's very exciting, really. If you're a global thinker, it's a lot of fun. Not that I would like to see a bubble burst here in America, home of our ancestors and land that we love, and Europe, needless to say, where our ancestors mainly come from.
But for some of us,
there is a shift, and it has to be certainly acknowledged. But I think it has to do with the kind of the ongoing cyclical nature of corruption, that when organizations and institutions do not stand in integrity, they tend to fall. It may not be quick, but they will fall, because they do not have the tripartite foundation they need in order to stand firmly against the winds of time. So what did I say? To distill it would be to say the psychological maturing I feel we really need to stand up to and upgrade in an evolutionary form. Our human nature is a note that we haven't yet sung. We are really not there. We are dealing with a lot of rhetoric, but I do not see the heart expanding to include the neediest of us all. I don't see us anywhere near the Christian or the Jewish or any other spiritual ideal and vision that our country was initially founded upon. And it's sad to me that we have so much further to go. Have there been incremental changes for the good? Yes. Are they outpaced by things that are bringing us in a downward spiral? Maybe. I feel very concerned that there are some 12 million children going to bed hungry every night in our wealthy United States of America, Dave. I feel saddened that the entire political process is dominated by two parties and two parties alone, which actually legally, if unethically, own the electoral process. Some a fact that most people are not beginning to be aware of. In fact, I'll be interviewing a very interesting gentleman, not to be a plug, but a gentleman named George Farah, who wrote a book called No Debate, and it is how the Democrats and the Republicans both have essentially purchased the debate process in the United States and the television airwaves, which are still owned by the public. They have co-opted the format, as well as ballot access in all 50 states, to such an extent that they have rendered it virtually impossible for any third-party candidate to begin to compete, let alone get on the airwaves with them to debate for the rest of the American public to see and have some sense of contrast with what Ralph Nader referred to as twiddly dumb and twiddly D, the Democrat Republican. Now, that's not a completely fair thing to say. I think there are marked differences between them, and that really does need to be acknowledged. But nonetheless, the fact that there is a monopoly I see as unhealthy and I see as retrograde. So to talk about cycles, I see a continuing process of recycling in new packages. But what I see primarily is an emperor without clothes.
Indeed, there is a lot of key points that you mentioned on the power of corporations and their influence on the government, the big bodies in the politic that rule out alternative parties from really having an opportunity to get other issues before the voters. We see something of a lack of compassion when there are pockets of underprivileged and essentially hungry people in all parts of the world, and we can find them here. Most notably, I would point to the Native American reservations here, which Yes. seem to be holes in the fabric of support in our society, where Yes. Poverty is perhaps the most extreme. Now, I haven't been everywhere, but my concerns Yes. are very much there as well. So what
is
happening?
Well made, yeah.
Yeah. And so what is happening in the world arena in all of these things? Well, in terms of cycles, now this is your insightful observation of what's going on. Theoretically, in what's going on, the machine age that gave us the power of the corporations to influence our town halls was a result of the physical cycle of the world, a 336-year slow-moving cycle crossed up just after the turn of the 19th century. We had wars and turbulence. Just ask Napoleon about that. But that really amplified the Industrial Revolution, which broke into its high half into the world, and it peaked throughout the 19th and 20th centuries, giving us the machine age. So that's where all of our emphasis went, and all our policy went that way, and our lifestyle went that way as we built cities to focus around mass producing factories and so forth. So where are we now in that? Well, that cycle that gave us the machine age, the Industrial Revolution, is no longer high. And it has crossed down, giving us 12 years of crisis from 1978 to 1990 as it crossed down. You had the Iranian hostage crisis during that time. It always castles crumble. You had the Berlin Wall come down. You had the standoff in Tiananmen Square. These were the behemoth monsters of the might makes right machine age basically falling. And we've been going in transition too as we continue to decline as the physical cycle is no longer high, which means that these powers that have been ruling as long as we can remember of generations before us, that's not the case anymore. We are now in a period of reform. One of the reasons why you're seeing recycling is getting to be stronger. Rivers are getting cleaned up. Lakes are getting cleaned up. That is going to continue. I can tell you, just in my home region of Pennsylvania, we swim in creeks that you wouldn't dare wade in when I was a kid. Yes. And this is a worldwide trend. But as far as reaching out with the heart, folks, the emotional and intellectual cycles that were low during the last two centuries, the repressive Victorian era, are now crossing up in a high. And we're in the breakthrough birth pangs now. This is why we had 9/11 shake up. This is why we're having the Arab Spring. This is why we had the land values collapse of 2008. This is an international event, not just the United States. And this is giving us a new age of reason and a new age of compassion while we're cleaning up the previous machine age. Now, that's my theory, folks. But yes. Mitch is on the front lines. He is not only reporting on what's happening, but through his interviews, his actions, his writings, and his casting, he is actually in some way one of the people that's making it happen. So as you look ahead, Mitch, where might you see world or national trends are going from this yes. point forward?
Yes.
Good not question. A special question.
No, it's not. And I also want to pick up on the notion, Dave, in Colorhythms, of the emotional and intellectual cycles beginning to inch upward. I think that's very insightful because it accords with my understanding of astrological cycles as well, as well as what I observe. So it's easy to identify so many of the issues of the day, of which I did a little sprinkling there, and it's easy to speak of those. And there are many, many, many more having to do with the crashing of the healthcare system and the pharmaceutical industry and the role Monsanto is playing in the USDA and the genetically modified organisms that are reaching out everywhere. But there is a counterpoint, a counterbalance to all of this, which is all very exciting. And there are breakthroughs happening emotionally and intellectually. And emotionally, let me just speak about that. There is an upsurge of caring among so many people on a local level. And that's an important point to make. I think national identities across the world, based on the democratization of media, especially the internet, and now we have internet radio, and we have internet-based TV, that with the democratization of information, we are seeing a, you could almost say, citizens legislation. Citizens of all countries are forming bonds cross-culturally, across boundaries, and the boundaries of countries are no longer as important or relevant to the people. It may be very relevant to governments because that's what keeps them in business, but the heartbeat of humanity is dancing, I'm daring to say, to a different drummer. And this is very exciting. Another place of crossover, of course, is in the arts, in cultural activity. Another is in science and engineering and technology. Another, of course, is sports, and it's evidenced by the Olympics. But what's going on, especially in technology, is breaking. A scientist or a technologist, an inventor, when he or she invents something, it's so exciting that they want to tell everybody. They don't want to keep it to themselves. They don't want to keep it to their own nation. You see, right, Eureka. They want to tell everybody. And it reminds me of an old Jewish joke that maybe later I'll tell you. But, you know, the thing is that you cannot suppress this breakthrough technology that is happening in the domains of green technology, among my other activities as a therapist and coach and consultant on individual levels and couples counseling. I also coach and consult to businesses and CEOs about the nature of their business, the priorities in the business, how to grow the companies into a sustainable, humanitarian-based kind of company. This is fun. You get it?
Yeah,
what I'm saying is that some of these behemoths of corporations are getting the message. I had a meeting in Midtown today with a corporate coach who talks with corporations about these kinds of things. I've had people on Amory Lovin's ex-wife. He's probably the greatest environmentalist in the world. He was hired by the Clinton administration to be the energy security macher, you know. And Amory Lovin's out of the Aspen Institute in Aspen, Colorado. When I had her on the show with a gentleman named Dan Boyd, a professor at University of California, or Vancouver, brilliant fellow as well. They co-authored a book all about how even Walmart, Shell, Amoco, the big boys, the big fierce boys, are all getting the environmental message. They're getting energy efficiency. They're getting the idea of shifting out of fossil fuels, even though that's been their bread and butter for all of these years. I'll let it go at that. And so there are some serious changes that are taking place behind the scenes. People really are waking up. Technologies are bridging and brooking what were otherwise serious differences between a third world country, so-called a developing country, and a first world, because of the internet, because of cell phones, because of smartphones. Things of this sort are shifting the planet completely. Now, as someone in the field of psychology for so long, I am distinctly aware of the differences on the outside and the differences on the inside. There are many, you could say, superficial changes that I'm reporting here that are lateral changes, that are good changes. They're for the good. And I'm thrilled with what's going on. Actually, films like Thrive by Foster Gamble, the son, the heir to the Procter Gamble family, produced and directed a film that is of great magnitude that I would certainly recommend to your audience, that traces what has happened to various technologies that have been buried since the 20s and before, like Ford's electric motor, the first motor Ford came up with, on and on. Tesla's work, yes, and on, that have been suppressed. But now we have something called the Tesla car, and there are breakthroughs. I'm involved in a company called KLD, which has an advanced electric motor system. I'm involved with a company that has got an LED lighting system that brings the lighting part of an electric bill off-grid from the outset. Major savings. And on, a windmill company out west that is far beyond Siemens and GE because it's a pinwheel technology. Pinwheel, that sounds like when we were children. But yep, these are the kinds of things that are beginning to mount and grow and on the increase. And to me, that signals a new possible world. Now, those are external things, and I think they're actually very, very important. On the inside, what I refer to, Dave, as inner ecology, I think we still have a lot of work to do. That's the psychological domain, the emotional domain, the spiritual domain. we all have aspirations to become more aligned, more inwardly unified, to mature as human beings, to become enlightened, so to speak. The most important part of all of that is maturation, from my point of view, for human beings to get with the Tao, to get the message of how we can be proper stewards. And for that, we need to discover the principles of sustainability. And there is a movement taking place. There is an awakening on the inner ecological level. It's just a slow turn of the wheel. But now, with the advent of the intellectual and emotional cycles, from your point of view, from the calorhythmic point of view, if you will, moving, spiraling upward, that is, I believe, going to give us the chance to actually redeem, strong word but on purpose, our humanity. And the choice is simple. We either do it rather massively and globally, or this species is going to vaporize. The Earth will carry on and recycle and return our remains. I'm not worried about her, even though we've been a bit parasitical over the past many thousands of years. But I am concerned about us as a humanity with such vast potential. And I would love to see us really get the message and get on with the job of realizing our own compassionate humanity. So did I answer your question?
You answered it very well, and we have the capability and the responsibility, because what we do does influence our own future. We're rising not only in abilities, but in self-realization as well, to even ask these questions. And there are people like you, Mitchell, who are on the forefront of asking this question. You're right that we have a long way to go, but also the cycles in which we're turning, they are very large, long cycles themselves. And we're just breaking up now on the world arena into what I call an emotional high, an intellectual high, after a couple of centuries of being low. So we've come out of a period of not arguing whether or not slavery should be the law, but whether is everyone well cared for among us? Are we being fair? Are we being just? And how can we improve? So the questions are still there, the very serious questions that we have today. But the arena has changed from when might made right in a physical high, emotional, intellectual low of the past couple of centuries, which also gave us a lot of good, too, let's not forget, to when cycles are reversing in the next couple of centuries ahead of us. We will reach eventually an emotional peak, an intellectual peak, and the physical cycle is in the reform period. That's the low part where we clean up the mess from before. Folks, you're listening to the Cycles of Change radio program here on blogtalkradio.com/cycles. We're talking with Mitchell Rabin of A Better World. You can find his site at abetterworld.tv. We're talking about some of the wonderful radio shows, the weekly TV shows that he has. Also, they are archived. You can listen to the radio shows from before for free right on his site. And you can get some very reasonably priced DVDs and so forth of some very interesting guests of his previous shows over these past two decades. And we're talking about, where have we come from? Where are we now? And where are we going? A conversation between myself, who is a theoretician, with Mitchell Rabin, who is on the field around the world and practicing his observations with the many, many people he meets. Mitchell, I think you raised some very good points here. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think that where we're going may be a little brighter than where we're coming from. And I don't want to downplay all of where we're coming from, because there's just been so many things. We do have the United States. We have the Constitution. It's a wonderful country in which to live, because, among other things, we have a way of being able to preserve our wonderful qualities while reforming the things that need to be reformed. And we have to do that. So we're in the process of doing that now. But the revolving spotlight of time is bringing a rise to some other countries in the world. And maybe we're not going to be quite the world leader in the next century. So we're going to have to learn to get along well with others.
I agree. And I tell you, at the end of the day, I look at all of this as what Carl Jung referred to as a path of individuation. And that applies on the individual level, but also the individual country level, nation level, and really for humanity at large. What do I mean by that? Take it out of the abstract, and as a good Taurus, bring it to the practical. That is to say that we all, at the end, need to learn the basic principles that have come to us from all of the traditions, East and West, the wisdom traditions. Learning patience, learning generosity, learning kindness. It sounds so funny. Learning cooperation. Do you know that book that came out, Dave, some years back called Everything I Learned I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten?
Yes.
Do you remember that book?
I sure do.
It's one of my favorites because I feel humanity remains in kindergarten but keeps thinking that it's in high school or college. But our impatience, I think, is that we expect college and graduate level behavior, but the emotional level is truly on that of kindergartners. And so hence our frustration and our pushing the river, so to speak, and pulling out the grass. Because it's like, are we there yet? Are we there? In other words, this whole idea of leadership, so to speak, of the United States as a superpower in the world. Wait a minute. What race is this? Do we want to be so economically and politically and militarily superior, meaning simply on top, literally, that others must be subservient to us? That others will go hungry so that we can live because our carbon footprint and consumer tendencies are so vast that others should go hungry? At the end of the day, I don't think this is the kind of human being we want to individuate into. So for us to exercise the fundamental human attributes, virtues of loving kindness, of fair play, of cooperation, even in the midst of playful competition, by the way, sort of like Olympic competition, where the best runner wins the award, you know? It's beautiful. Like we just had in the U.S. Open. It was amazing to watch. And these guys shake hands and hug afterwards like, game well played, man. Game well played. And that's the way I think we should be on the international arena. Not me first, you second. But I say we can all win. And I have evolved a various thoughts and writings that allow us to actually create a better world without having to get military with each other, without having to one wins, another loses. There's a win-win game out there. And I think this kind of emotional, psychological, and spiritual evolution is what this game is really all about, not who's at the top of the military or the industrial food chain.
This is indeed the way we're moving. You know, one of the things I mentioned about...
Does that all make sense to you?
It makes sense, and here's why. I use the words physical, emotional, and intellectual, basic words in our language, describing, you know, three parts of the self. But there's also a way of physically based, emotionally based, and intellectually based behavior. And you can look at it this way. Physically based behavior is a win-lose mentality. Emotionally based behavior is a right and wrong mentality, and an intellectually based behavior is simply correct or incorrect thinking. So yes. What has been dominating the scenario from which you describe that you say they're removing is the, just like you said, it's zero-sum game, my win is your loss. And so we're moving away from a power and dominance hierarchy to more of a polycephalous network. Just means that we're all... Literally, it means many heads throughout it. Think of it like a sponge-like network. Instead of this flow chart hierarchy of down to two off of each one and three, you know, traditional flow chart. Think of it more as like a polycephalous sponge-like network where, you know, I've worked for companies where if I wanted to speak to somebody else that was my equal in another building when I was a building manager, I would have to go up to a head, over to another head, send a communique down through his superior and then get to him. Then that was in a company I worked for, founded in the 19th century. Then I began building management in Center City, Philadelphia, et cetera, working for a newly formed company, and anybody could communicate with anyone else. And it didn't matter. I could communicate directly with another building manager. I could communicate directly with the leasing department or whatever. Because the content is what ruled whether it was going to be accepted or not. So, and you, of course, you're still going to have form, but you don't have form at the expense of getting fluidic. This is why the internet now has transcended national boundaries. We are becoming an instantaneous, transcending the borders. Fences are coming down, and we're just becoming more of a fast connected society, and that's going to continue. While at the same time, that we're declining in the win-lose mentality, we are breaking into the right and the wrong, and we're thinking more, a little more towards the correct and incorrect. You may not see it yet in your backyard or in a neighborhood coming to you very clearly, mm-hmm. but it's there growing, and we're just breaking into it now. And I believe that these little things that you see that give you a sign of it or a bellwether of great things to come for quite a period of time. That's what the cycles are telling me, Mitch.
Yes, Dave. No, it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. I think there is an incremental evolution. I think education and art and film, the media, humor, I should call them the laughing arts, are all creating a confluence of energy, sort of like turning on an ignition, that will allow us to move into a more heart-based and intellectually related cycle and sphere. Out of the militaristically oriented physical space that you're referring to, physical cycle, and where, you know, brawn beats brain. It's now time for an evolutionary step. And what that looks like is fairly awesome. I look forward to a day where society will actually catch up with the breakthroughs in quantum physics. That's an exciting thought, where we come to understand that most of the material world that we perceive is actually, from a quantum physics point of view, empty. Actually, even from a Newtonian point of view, it's empty. When you would, you know, in atomic theory, I mean, what is the most, the largest volume of an atom is actually the space between the little particles. You know, so it's like poking your finger through the Pillsbury Doughboy and just keeps going. You know?
And through quantum motion, it has a tendency to exist at some times in certain places until you
exactly.
look at it.
It's mere probability, right, Watson. It's mere probability. And that's elementary. In fact, it is. It's elementary physics. So our reality, our current paradigm, is so Flintstones based. It's funny to those of us who have kind of tuned in to another level of scientific understanding. Forget the language of spirit for a moment. Just physics, as they say. Give me the facts. give me the physics, just the physics. And that's enough to actually intellectually and thereby spiritually catapult us into another ring of fire, into another cycle of spiraling upward cycle of our own consciousness. That is exciting. And I'll go another step. We are so earthbound in our activity, all of the suffering and the stress that goes on this planet. There's so little leisure time for contemplation. We are all jammed into an economic situation, like animals of burden. You know, we have to pay our rent, and we have to pay our taxes, and we have to pay our mortgage, and we have to buy the food. So we're in this form of slave mentality. That's why I said before, while things seem to change, they also stay so much the same.
Yes.
Some say, Dave, that slavery ended many moons ago. Well, why in the world then did we need the civil rights movement if slavery ended? How come rights weren't God-given to the black man as they were to the rest of the American population? I don't get it. But I say that slavery never ended. It actually expanded. Now it includes everybody. It doesn't matter. It's transcended color. Everyone is included. And we're economic slaves. So we don't have the leisure, as the Buddhists like to refer to, the precious human birth gives rise to the leisure of a human life with time to meditate and to contemplate the preciousness of having a human body, which is an alchemical system that allows us to transmutate materials from grosser to finer, so we can actually produce more spirit from the Taoist point of view, to mix some metaphors, because it's all connected. And to become ever more intelligent, by the way, and to fulfill the first notion I put on the table here, this wonderful notion, this rich, empowering notion of human potential. Who are we? Well, many astronomers. I remember being at a Jungian conference, and an astronomer there who was speaking said, who is a very straight-laced Israeli scientist, said, well, we're all stardust. What?
Yeah.
Stardust? Of what do you speak? She said, of science. That's
yes.
What? We're all actually stardust. And now, you know this, but many do not. And I didn't either before her comment.
Every molecule in our bodies.
Exactly. Fascinating. So you see the interconnectedness of all things. And I think it's time that we gain our leisure and we cool out this economic slavery and we get the government off our backs and we get the corporations off the government's back and we just treat people on a local level with human courtesy, respect, and decency. And we take each other like, you know, the idea of being one's brother's keeper, at least up to a certain point. And we have fun at being of service. And we gain the time we need to reflect on our human condition, on our human life, on our terrestrial life, on our role as stewards of this planet, and this planet in relation to the solar system, and the solar system in relationship to the galaxy, and the galaxy in relationship to the rest of the universe.
Indeed.
Wow. But I mean it. You know, isn't it time for us to relate to ourselves as cosmological beings as well? You know, that's one of the interesting breakthroughs taking place. The people who have had extraterrestrial contact experiences are calling the government forward for releasing the documents of this kind of what is sometimes referred to as exo-political contact, and it's verifiable, and it's confirmable, and Stephen Greer in the Disclosure Project, a well-known doctor, by the way, who has spearheaded this for decades now. Lawrence Rockefeller was actually part of funding it, as I understand. So this is high-level suppression of data that many people, some of whom I, by the way, interviewed on my TV show back in the 90s. I'm talking about military career men, Dave, who have come forward and broken the code of silence to which they were sworn, by the way, when they were in military uniform, and have come forward. One of the gentlemen's name is Robert Dean. He was on, he was written up in Omni magazine, and many others. He was part of the CSETI project originally with Dr. Stephen Greer, as I recall. And they have said it is time to break the code of silences, going back now 20 years. We need to know that we have friends and neighbors on other planets and in other solar systems. And it's only the small-mindedness of humans that do not want to peer outside of their bubble and see that we are, as Buckminster Fuller said, riding on our own spaceship. And that's what the Earth is, moving through space at light speed. And we have other brothers and sisters on neighboring planets who are waving to us out the window, waiting to say hello. I'm having some fun with you here. But, you know, I'm speaking here to break through mental fixations that we have, incrustations, habituations of mind that keep us fixed in lock, stock, and barrel with the way we think, and we have to break out of it in order to really embrace these higher intellectual and emotional cycles that are coming our way through sponsored by Calorhythms.
Well, you've got a balance between self-interest and social interest and thinking outside of the box, as it were. You mentioned Jung's work on individuation. The principle of individuation was defined even earlier by Duns Scotus. But if you talk about Jung said that sometimes we have to differentiate beyond our comfort zone. And thinking outside of not only our own culture, our own nation, our own zone of familiarity, and you mentioned even outside of our own planet, is all something that we need to reach for, because you hit on a key point. It's time. And so the questions that you have raised here are really the questions that are going to be leading us forward. You spoke of us not having time. We're in servitude to our jobs and to the system and so forth. You know, now that we've abated the extreme horrors of slavery, we're now taking the next step to talk about, well, what about just the existence of servitude? You know, when people get old now, they're sent away in old folks' homes because when they're not able to produce physically, what good are they? All they have now is a mind. Well, please, how about some emotional maturity? How about leadership? How about wisdom? We're moving from survival of the fittest to survival of the wisest.
Yes.
And I think this is a quote I heard said by Deepak Chopra. I love when he said that. And he believes that's where we are right now. We're on the verge of making an evolutionary step in that regard. So, Mitchell, I wanted you to come on to the show because I believe that the work and the questions that you are bringing to us is leading the way. And the things that you point out and many of the other ones are leading the way to where we're going, where we must go. And they are so beautifully articulated in the interviews because you have a way of selecting guests, bringing them on. So, folks, I invite you all, go over to abetterworld.tv, check out what Mitchell Rabin is doing with A Better World, and also check out my site at Calorhythms, K-A-L-A. rhythms.org for the cycles of time, the cycles of change, and do check out my friend and colleague Mitchell Rabin. Mitch, thank you so much for edifying our listeners here on the Cycles of Change Radio.
Big wave, Dave. It is my true pleasure. Keep up the good work. I'm honored that you are following in the footsteps of Mitchell Rabin at A Better World. It's beautiful, and you're darn good at it. I really appreciate your contribution with your brilliant work, and I really mean it, of Calorhythms. I am a true advocate.
Appreciate
and
it,
continue to be, and continue to also be a student of yours and of Calorhythms and the work you're now doing in media. I think it's fabulous. I love to have you on board with us with this.
Thank you, Mitch. You have set the example that I'm following and bringing the word out to people, and that's what we want to do. There's a lot of things that we want to share, and this is what it's all about. This is Cycles of Change radio program. Listen into the future. You'll be able to call in the future shows and contribute the comments and ask questions. I'm David Katzmeyer, your host, signing out for this evening. Thank you for listening.